everybody. Welcome to Creepy Club. This is a storytelling podcast where we talk about weird stuff, like ghosts and true crime and all things creepy. I'm Rissa.
I'm Heidi.
And as always, this is a not safe for work podcast. We cuss and we talk about murder and stuff, so might not be suitable for young listeners. This is meeting number 12, where I tell Heidi about the case of Andre Daigle. And it kind of ventures into a true crime realm. It's definitely got some murder in it, so you might not want to listen to it if you're sensitive to that. Also has a little bit of the new agey element to it, so this is going to be a good one. So thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoy it. I've had a lot of coffee, and I took a nap. I'm feeling refreshed and ready to go.
God, I wish naps had that effect on me. Usually I wake up and I'm like, I'm such a zombie.
Have you tried doing, so you drink coffee or espresso right before you take a nap, and then when you wake up, you're like, woo, because it kicks in as you're sleeping.
Yeah, I have. In fact, I've taken my Adderall before I took a nap and woke up and still felt like a zombie.
Oh, nuts.
So I would say,
maybe your naps are too long. How long do you take a nap?
I'm just sleep disordered.
Oh, yeah.
I have issues.
All right.
I got neuro baggage.
And the content I'm going to be talking about today is a murder. So if you're sensitive to murder, then maybe skip this one.
I'm kind of the murder queen. What are you doing?
You'll find out. You'll find out why I'm doing this one.
Get off my lawn.
It ventures into my new agey territory a little bit.
Okay.
And that's why I'm doing it. Oops.
And we have been alternating, generally speaking.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided it's fine to break the rule to alternate. So we may not, it might not always be Rissa Holly, Rissa Holly.
Right.
We might mix it up.
We're rule breakers.
Total rebels.
Also, this is a storytelling podcast. So
that's
we're
true.
Not super worried about getting everything factual or scientifically correct.
It's okay. I think we need to restate that because
sure.
It's not that we don't care at all.
Right.
But we don't have a laboratory set up here.
And we don't have a ton of research time.
We have limited research time, although I do manage to generate fairly thick piles of paper in my limited research time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're just regular people. We don't have PhDs in anything.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. So we're doing the best we can. We're lay people. That's probably the best we can say.
Yeah.
We're lay people. I don't think our I have a bachelor's in psych,
mm-hmm.
which qualifies me to do nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I have a bachelor's in dance, so that qualifies me to do less than nothing.
No, you can teach people to dance.
That's true, but you don't have to have a degree to teach people to dance.
I mean, I don't think that a degree in psychology is worthless by any means. I think it's, by any means, I think it's extremely helpful. However, I'm not, like, qualified to counsel people or to make a diagnosis. Although
you do that anyway.
I do it for my own amusement all the time.
Yeah.
Whether or not I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sue me, because what are you going to do? Take the license I don't have?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
this also might be a fun episode because I'm drinking wine and I've put this limitation on myself that I can only drink it at home because I tend to overdo it.
Right. So when I came in and she was drinking wine, I was like, oh, so you're not going anywhere tonight.
Absolutely not. And the wine I'm drinking is called 19 Crimes, and it has a old timey mugshot on the front. So
it's very, the label, I'm digging the label a lot. Is it from a Missouri winery?
I don't think so.
Let me check this out.
So yeah, so it's very on brand.
Oh, crap.
For this podcast.
Why does it? Can't they make words for an old people font?
Let me see.
Why is everything so small?
Give it to me, Grandma.
Ugh, I hate you. My newest trick is that I take pictures of things so I can zoom.
I think it's Australian. Oh, no. imported from Sonoma, California. So
that's my trick for you other people.
It does say wine of Australia, though.
For failing eyesight, is you can take a picture with your phone, then you can zoom.
Oh, nice. So it is from Australia, but it is imported by a winery or a company in Sonoma.
Well, yeah, somebody's got to get it here, right? Yeah. So maybe by the end you'll have an Australian accent. Please don't, though, because I love the accent, but I can't understand anything that they're saying at all. So I tried to listen to a podcast once, and the person was super Aussie. Uh-huh. And I thought, shit, I need a transcript. Because yeah. I mean, my hearing's kind of crummy anyway, mm-hmm. but I could only understand like every fifth word. It was tiresome. And the topic was super interesting. I just got frustrated.
Mm-hmm. So I know a good prompt to like get yourself in the Australian accent. So if you say raise up lights, it sounds like razor blades in an Australian accent.
Raise up lights.
Raise up lights.
Rice sublights. Interesting. Is this like tip of the teeth, tip of the tongue?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. All right.
You
wacky theater people.
I also wanted to say for any audiophiles in our audience that I'm sorry, the audio seems to be inconsistent from episode to episode. So many of our, you know, long time listeners, quote unquote long time, may recognize that, I don't know, we don't know what we're doing. And Audacity is a free program, and sometimes it's just weird. Like, sometimes
we don't have a benefactor yet.
Yeah, sometimes we'll record and then pause it, and then when we record again, the audio sounds completely different. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm doing the best I can.
We're open to like a sugar mama situation. Yeah.
If anyone wants to come produce the show as a volunteer experiential basis, that would be great. I mean, I never want to ask anybody to work for free, but if you feel like volunteering, hey.
Don't let us stop you. You can have the rest of my bottle of Tanqueray. Yeah.
Also, we're going to try to keep it in a tight 90 instead of going however long we can. The last episode was about 2 hours long, and we realized that being new podcasters, that we have to pay more if we're going to have longer episodes. So,
whoops,
we're going to try to keep it in check from now on. So, but thanks for bearing with us.
We're learning as we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we think you're amazing.
It's only our 12th episode.
Thank you, all four of you.
13 and counting episode zero. Anyway, so let's move on to creepy corrections, conclusions, clarifications.
Alrighty.
So I think I wrote this note a long time ago, and we can cut this out if this is wrong, but do you have an update on the wildlife collector's permit? Did you have a friend?
No, we talked about it in the last episode. So you can get a collection permit, but typically you are sponsored by some sort of university or
right.
You're sponsored by somebody sciencey, and there are some exceptions where you're allowed to collect things that are, you know, like bones and that kind of stuff, but it depends on the kind of park that you're in.
That's what it was. That was the update, was like, it depends on. Okay, great.
It's probably, if you think that that's something that you might want to do, maybe call the park office before you go.
Gotcha.
Make sure that you're not going to get some fat fine.
Fat fine.
Because you're like, I really needed this raccoon rib cage real bad, and now I owe $500 or something ridiculous, or now I have to go to court and explain it. So
raccoon rib cage is the name of my punk band.
Yeah, I play the tambourine in the punk band.
It is the punkest of all instruments.
It's super. As a grown-up aging punk rock kid, mm-hmm. Tambourines are in all the punk band stuff.
Yep. So
and the triangle.
A vomitorium. Do you remember when we talked about the voms in the Grandel Theater?
Yeah.
It's been a month for all you listening at home. We haven't recorded an episode in a month.
Well, and that was the thing when I went to go perform there with the Lady Arm Wrestlers, where I thought I was going to break a leg because it's like a super steep bowling alley.
Yeah. So I looked it up on Wikipedia and I really liked this, the etymology of it. So a vomitorium is a passage situated below or behind a tier of seats in an amphitheater or stadium through which big crowds can exit rapidly at the end of the performance. So originally they were an audience, an entrance and exit. Hmm. Now they're just primarily, I mean, at least in the theaters that I've gone to, they're just an entrance and exit for actors during the performance.
And the ones at the Grandel are super steep. I suspect that that is not typical.
Probably not. I mean, I've only ever been in one other theater with VOMs, and they're longer and therefore less steep. But the Latin word vomitorium, plural vomitoria, derives from the verb vomo or vomir, to spew forth. In ancient Roman architecture, vomitoria were designed to provide rapid egress for large crowds at amphitheaters and stadiums, as they do in modern sports stadiums and large theaters.
So that thing where they said that people would have these big feasts and they would go to the vomitorium and barf so they could eat more, is that false?
Maybe there's also that kind of vomitorium?
I don't know. Maybe that's one of those things like, you know, Catherine the Great getting it on with horses. Like, it's just one of those
urban legend.
Yeah, things that persist over time. And because it sounds like vomit, it makes more sense that, like, if you go to Ballpark Village, they have those ramps instead of it being stairs or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't think about them being in stadiums, like base sports things, because I don't do sports a whole lot, but
I don't know about sports ball, but I've been like twice. I don't know what was happening.
Yeah, but I guess those are technically bombs.
I would think so.
Vomitoria. I mean,
super duper long ramps.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a pretty name, Vomitoria.
Yes. And so the Grandel has Vomitoria because they have two. They have two, stage left and stage right.
Yes. And we talked about how there was what a sextant is, because I think I accidentally said sextant instead of sexton, because we were talking about that.
Oh, yeah, the person who
the ghost does who lived in the theater.
Yeah, or they're a person who, like, takes care of they do the building, like, the maintenance, housekeeper kind of person at a church.
So a sextant is a doubly reflecting navigation instrument that measures the angular distance between two visible objects. The primary use of a sextant is to measure the angle between an astronomical object and the horizon for the purposes of celestial navigation.
Oh, so if you ever see the movies, like a sailor thing.
Yeah, if you ever see the movies where they have like a big map like laid out in the captain's quarters on a table,
right?
And they have the little like compass like thing, and they're like walking it along. Yeah, that's a sextant.
Okay,
so that's it for the CCCs for that one.
Hey, that's pretty good for us.
Nice and short. Do you know? You want to know what we're talking about this week?
Well, you've certainly piqued my interest. Especially since you delved into my true love category.
Yep.
Murder. I don't love that murder happens.
Right.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, I think anyone that's listening to this podcast shares a similar
viewpoint. Yeah, I just think it's interesting. Earlier today, I briefly listened to a YouTube video that I was not watching, I was just listening to. And it was a psychologist talking about the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. You sent it to me.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah, I guess I didn't actually know the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath. I did know the narcissistic thing, or the difference between narcissist and psychopath, and that one can be the other, but the other can't be.
Well, I knew the difference because of what I studied in school.
Oh, uh-huh.
I'm not sure that I necessarily remembered that psychopaths, they think, are born that way.
Right.
So, versus a sociopath who may be the result of conditioning, abuse, environment, that kind of thing, just sort of a wearing down of empathy over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you got to steal all the time to survive, you stop thinking about it being wrong.
Right.
And so you don't have that arousal feeling where mm-hmm. you're like, ooh, that feels icky, because you have to stuff down to get by.
Right.
And if you have to do that all the time as a kid just to exist, by the time you get to an adult, you're like, meh.
Right. You've already made that association.
Yeah. And so a sociopath, in some ways, not that what they do is okay, but chances are it's not their fault.
Yeah. It's a little more forgivable. Like, we, as people that aren't sociopaths, can have empathy for sociopaths.
Well, I mean, if a psychopath is born that way, that's not their fault either.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do something with them.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic. I have a lot of conflicted feelings about what to do with people like, you know, the Ted Bundys and Jeffrey Dahmers of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So no time for the prison industrial complex today.
We're going to talk about the case of Andre Daigle.
Okay.
And
let's find people with the most interesting names.
Yeah. So this research started as me looking for stories about psychics who helped police investigations.
Oh, see, now I've always heard that they've largely been not particularly helpful.
Well, maybe this will change your mind.
Okie dokie. Yeah, but I do love that show Medium.
I know, it's a good show. I wanted to do kind of like I did with ghosts who helped solve their own murders. I wanted mm-hmm. to do like maybe three stories or so, but this one ended up being like a fascinating true crime case that also has a psychic element to it. And so I was like, this is a great case on its own.
Okay.
So in 1987, Elise McGinley, who is a sister of Andre Daigle, reported her brother missing after he hadn't been seen in 4 days.
Why don't they have the same name?
She's probably married.
Oh, how old are they?
I mean, they're full-grown adults.
Oh, they're grown-ups. They're not. Yeah. These aren't children.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their age is, but
okay, in my mind, they were like kids. Like, somebody got swiped off a bicycle. So, thank you for clarifying.
Sure. So, or she, you know, there's a lot of reasons why her last name could, even if they were kids.
No, I know.
Name shame.
I'm not name shaming. They could be half brother and sister. It's not wrong for them to not have the same last name. I was just wondering why.
Right.
Why didn't
right.
they? I'm so the kidding. Reason is that they are adults
mm-hmm.
and it's possible that maybe she was married, or maybe they always had different last names. Who the heck knows?
Who knows? So Andre had been last seen leaving a New Orleans bar with a woman that he had met that night. So police, unsurprisingly, were like, he probably just ran off with this woman, so who cares, you know? But Andre's family was skeptical because it was really unlike him to, like, no call, no show into work.
So he was like Mr. Stability.
Right. Plus, he was supposed to be house-sitting for his brother, and he hadn't made any arrangements to feed his brother's cat.
Yeah, that doesn't reek of responsibility.
Right.
To just no call, no show, not take care of an animal.
Yes.
Yeah, I would be suspicious that if that was, you would think if you've asked someone to care for your pet that you would trust them to show up.
Right. Yeah. So the sister, Elise, she lived in California at the time, and was frustrated at the police's inaction and didn't really know what to do. And her coworker, I guess she's telling her coworker about this, and her coworker was like, you should go see a psychic. Totally me. The coworker was me.
That's so hilarious, because I would be like, blow up the phone of every agency in the area until you get someone that listens to you.
Right.
Like, totally opposite reaction. I'd be mm-hmm. like, who's the alderwoman or alderman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Elise,
I love that we would have such different paths.
Right. So Elise decides to go see the psychic, Rosemarie Kerr, And she kind of expected Rosemary to be like, you know, witchy or like patchouli or whatever, you know, crystal ball kind of psychic.
Stevie Nicks.
Right. But she described Rosemary as a conservatively dressed middle-aged woman. So just a regular gal.
Just a regular old gal from up the block, mm-hmm. bringing a casserole when you move to the neighborhood kind of person.
Yep. So okay. Rosemary told her to bring a photo of her brother and a map of the area where he lived. Mm-hmm. So she does that. And Rosemary, she's like running her fingers over the map to kind of get a feel for it and maybe like touching his picture a little bit or something, you know, the thing that psychics do. And she had a vision of Andre in his truck with a man who had long blonde hair and a woman who had, she said he, she exerted a hold on Andre somehow.
Hmm.
She also saw a bridge with railroad tracks and a long expanse of water. And that there was something important about the number 7. You know how those psychics do. And
why did they never get complete messages?
She also felt a severe pain in her head. And so she's feeling the map to try to determine the location where his body, or not where, because they don't know he's murdered yet. She's trying to feel the map to determine where he might be located. She ran her finger over the area until she felt a tingle near Slidell, which is about 30 miles from where Andre lived. So she told Elise that she'd find the truck there with maybe with Andre, but she has to have that area searched quickly. So Elise calls her family, even though it's like 11:30 at night in New Orleans, and she tells them to search this area, Slidell. And her family's like, you went to a psychic and you're telling us this? That's crazy. But she finally convinces them to go search this area. They're like,
oh, hell, fine, I'll put on pants.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're all worried about him, too.
Sure.
So it wouldn't take me much to go look.
Even as skeptical as I am, mm-hmm. I would be like, I've been wrong before. I'm going to have absolutely nothing to lose by doing this experiment.
Right. So they go up there, they're looking around, they kind of split up into different areas of this place, and Andre's brother Christian saw Andre's truck drive past him, driven by a man with long blonde hair.
Ooh.
And another man in the passenger seat.
Ooh.
So Christian proceeds to chase the car. Not a great idea, but it worked out in this case. He sees a patrol car on the side of the road, so he pulls up to the police guy, and he's like, hey, that car was stolen. So the police were like, okay, and they start chasing the car. They pursued the vehicle, almost losing it when it turns off the road, but they turned off into a dead end, so Christian and the police cornered this guy, or this truck. Officer Thomas Corley pulled a gun on the occupants of the truck and ordered them to surrender. And they ended up arresting Charles Gervais and Michael Phillips, who were the two guys that were driving the truck, Andre's truck. So while being questioned, Gervais admits to murdering Andre.
Oh.
By hitting him repeatedly on the back of the head with a hammer, strangling him with a wire coat hanger, and then an electric cord cut from a light fixture. So until this point, police thought they were just dealing with the stolen truck. They had no idea about this murder.
That's quite a confession.
Right. Yeah, he gave up the ghost right away.
Yeah, I mean, he just got nailed for a car. He could have He could have withheld for a minute.
I mean, this you know, says to me that he was feeling pretty shitty about it.
Or that it was so inevitable that he was going to get caught.
Yeah, that's true.
That he might as well just give up the goods.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will become clear that they were going to get caught at some point. Anyway. So, Gervais stated that they murdered Andre to prove to the other that they could do it. And the police sort of surmised this was maybe a way for them to, like, bond themselves to each other as, like, mutual blackmail situation.
Okay, that's the dumbest idea ever.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the truth. So Gervais also assisted the police by showing them the apartment where the murder happened, and then took them to a spot off of Interstate 55 where they disposed of the body. Police found Andre's body wrapped in a curtain and nailed into a couch.
What the fuck?
Right. It was next to an elevated bridge-like interstate with railroad tracks to the east and water on both sides of the railroad tracks off of exit 7. So, remembering back to where the psychic said, a guy with long blonde hair.
I mean, I feel like she should get some kind of prize.
Mm-hmm. She said she also saw a woman who exerted a hold over Andre that will become clear more momentarily.
Okay.
And then the interstate road with railroad tracks and a vast expanse of water off of exit 7. She nailed it. So the police.
Except for the nailing him into a couch.
Right.
Super weird.
Super weird. So the police also ended up arresting Thelma Horn as well, who's this woman that the psychic saw.
Okay.
Presumably, I guess. So while, fun fact, while jailed and awaiting trial, Gervais sued to be able to practice satanic rituals in his cell.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Has nothing to do with anything, but I just thought that was funny.
Like, he didn't want kosher food or, like...
Mm-hmm. I think he did win, too. I mean, because it's a religious, you know...
It is, but... That's also, Satanism doesn't have satanic rituals like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not.
I would say that probably some form of it does, but not the form that we're familiar with, because it's like mostly kind of a parody of a religion in a lot of ways.
Have you ever watched interviews with the guy who's the head of the satanic church?
Yeah, I haven't watched any, but I've listened to podcasts that he is on.
His name is Lucian Graves, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. Super smart.
Like, yeah, I really like that dude.
I really like him. And he's not deliberately trolling people.
Right.
But they're usually so misinformed that it kind of comes off that way.
Yeah.
Because... They say such stupid things that are so far off base.
Yeah.
And like even the FBI has come out and said that, you know, ritualized killings in the name of Satan, that sort of thing is just a bunch of malarkey. That's people using that as an excuse that's not really connected to satanic church. It's really more of a philosophy. I think
there's offshoots though that might still do that crazy shit, but.
Oh, there's kooky cults of all flavors, no question. But the actual satanic church, I mean, like...
They're more of like a humanitarian society.
They're just I'm kind of into me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to put up the Ten Commandments, then I would like Beelzebub and a pentagram. Thank you very much. And
this statue of Baphomet.
Yes, which they recently won, which was hilarious. Yeah. And I'm super about separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't matter what the religious icon was. I would oppose it.
Right.
It wouldn't matter if it was my religion. Yeah. I'm not religious, but if I still think it's wrong and it doesn't belong at City Hall or wherever the most recent one was. So
I think it was in Arkansas, right? They erected a statue of Baphomet in front of the court building or something like that.
And it was really quite a spectacle.
Yeah. Actually, let me look that up and we'll do it.
But I watched an interview with him recently, and I think he wears one colored contact. And I think it's just kind of to throw people off, like he has one blue eye and one brown eye that I'm sure is not natural.
Mm-hmm.
And he does come off as being a little bit smug. But I kind of wonder what his background is. He's obviously very bright. And I kind of get the feeling that maybe... He is a trained as an attorney or something like that. He definitely knows his legal stuff.
Right. So it was a bronze statue of the satanic goat monster. That's what this article calls it.
Oh, boy.
That's not accurate. But anyway, so they erect a statue of Baphomet at the Arkansas Capitol building.
That's what it was. Because there was, like, Ten Commandments statue, right? Yep. Like, the scroll, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it would have been a lot easier to just get rid of the Ten Commandments thing, but whatevs.
I think this is better.
I mean,
I want a statue of Baphomet. That's
it's kind of hilarious, but anyway, he's just a real smart guy.
Yeah. So let's get back to the trial. So this is from testimony from Nick Shelley, who is Andre's friend who was with him the night he got murdered. He says, on June 9th, 1987, Andre and him were shooting pool at a bar called Mitchell's Lounge.
And this is New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so picture, like, crawdads and Christmas lights and
do I have to beads. Picture crawdads? I don't want to. I'll go for the, it's very, yeah, I gotcha.
Maybe some iron railings.
Some Mardi Gras mass. Yeah. Got it.
Probably some smooth jazz playing. Well, I guess it's not really smooth jazz. Anyway. So.
Some Harry Connick.
Yeah. So they're shooting pool and Thelma Horn and Michael Phillips, who are two people that were arrested, they happen to be there as well. After every game, the loser would buy a round of drinks. And so,
fair.
Yeah. And so every time Andre would go to the bar, Thelma was sitting there and she kind of, you know, making eyes at him and, you know, trying to have a friendly conversation. So
she was doing the flirting.
Yeah. So after they decided they were done playing pool, Andre introduced Nick to Thelma and they started talking about what they were going to do after they left the bar. Nick, there's an interesting detail that Nick mentioned that she avoided eye contact with him. Eventually it was decided that Nick was going to go home and that Thelma would go with Andre to another nightclub. To a nightclub. Not another nightclub. To a nightclub. So that's where Nick's testimony ends. And then this is testimony from Tammy Slaughter, who is a friend and neighbor of Horn, Gervais, and Phillips, the three people that were arrested in this case.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do we know what the relationship of the woman is to the men? Was she girlfriend, sister?
We'll find out in this testimony.
Okay.
So, and also, fun fact, Tammy Slaughter married Gervais's brother after this trial. Doesn't have anything to do with this, but I just thought that was funny.
It kind of seems a little bit set in stone that this was going to be her path with that name.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, she doesn't have anything to do with the murder, so she's just an innocent bystander. So Horn, Phillips, and Gervais shared an apartment. Those are the three people. Horn is Teresa Horn, who's the woman, and then the two guys, Phillips and Gervais. They shared an apartment. Phillips and Horn shared a bedroom, so I think that they were romantically involved.
Oh.
Not sure. So the three had run into financial difficulties, and they were being evicted from the apartment. On June 9th, which is the night that Andre got murdered, Tammy spent the day with Horn, Phillips, and Gervais watching TV in their apartment. Later, they all went to Tammy's apartment, which she shared with her sister and mother to cook dinner. Around 6 p.m., Horn borrowed some clothes from Tammy's sister and went out. At around 9:30, after Tammy, Phillips, and Gervais ate dinner, Horn returned, spoke briefly with Phillips outside, and then they both left together. Gervais left around 10 p.m., and then around midnight, Horn returned to Tammy's apartment, asked to use the phone, but Tammy denied her because her mother didn't allow visitors after 10.
Good for her.
Yeah. So then the next morning, around 10 a.m., Tammy went over to their apartment, and she noticed that it was really, really cold, and that the couch had been moved.
Curious.
So, and then Tammy and...
Moved or removed?
Moved. It was in a different spot than she recognized. You know, like, she'd been over there a lot. They were friends.
Oh, okay.
And so she just noticed that the couch had been moved. She was like, that's weird. And it's also really cold in here. So Tammy and Gervais sit on the couch and they start watching TV. 15 minutes later, Horn and Phillips came downstairs. Tammy asked them why it was so cold, and they said they were checking the antifreeze.
Okay.
45 minutes later, Tammy leaves. And then around 6 or 7, Tammy returns to the apartment, which is still freezing, and the couch is still in the same weird spot that it had been that morning. And Horn, Phillips, and Gervais were getting ready to leave. So all four of them leave the apartment together. Horn, Phillips, and Gervais got into a black truck. Tammy had never seen this truck before. She was like, where'd you get this from? And Horn said she borrowed it from a friend.
Hmm.
So the next day, June 11th, around noon, Tammy went over their apartment again. Horn let her in and told her that they'd been evicted. The temperature was normal and the couch was gone.
So, I was getting Tammy Horn and What's-Her-Face Slaughter mixed up.
This is Tammy Slaughter. Tammy Slaughter is the innocent bystander. Teresa Horn is the not innocent bystander.
So many T's. Okay.
Yeah.
So Slaughter, not Slaughtery.
Well, I'm calling Tammy Slaughter Tammy and Teresa Horn Horn because I want to call the perpetrators by their last name and the innocent people by their first name because I think it's more conversational and nice.
Okay. I'm into it.
All right. So, and then also Tammy noticed a red spot on the carpet. Spilled wine. I like that we both went there. So, that's where Tammy's testimony ends. And then this is testimony from Timothy Kearns, who worked as a maintenance person and a manager for the apartment that Horn lived in. So Timothy was advised from the landlord that the apartment was vacant. So on June 10th, which is the morning after the murder, he went to clean the apartment. He saw Gervais's car in the driveway, so he knocked and no one answered, so he let himself in. He noticed the apartment was super cold, the floors were wet, and the furniture was still in the apartment. So he thought that was weird. And then Horn, like, runs from upstairs and rushes him out of the apartment. And she tells him that Phillips was in court and that he'd have the rent payment when he returned.
So she's being weird.
Right. And then, so the police had also found evidence that Phillips was pawning some of Andre's belongings. So that's probably where he was at the time. And then later that day, Gervais and Phillips asked...
out of all the places you're going to say someone is, why would you say they're at court?
Right.
Like, why is that the first thing? I'd be like, they're at the store.
Yeah.
They're at work.
Yeah.
They are court. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That just... To me, that tells you a lot about their lifestyle.
Right.
Like, that's the first thing that pops into someone's head.
Right.
Is, oh, they're at court.
Right.
Like, that's something people do all the time.
Yeah. It's a believable lie.
I mean, jury duty, maybe, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I went to court 20 years ago when I got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Last time. Yeah.
Right.
So...
So later that day, Gervais and Phillips asked Timothy if they could stay in the apartment until the 12th. Timothy was like, I have to check, because he's not the landlord. He's just a maintenance guy. So the next day, Timothy comes back, and Gervais and Phillips were moving the furniture out of the house. Philip tries to sell Timothy his car for $300, but Timothy declined. Timothy also stated that he found a lamp with a cord missing on the premises.
Okay. If you have a car that's $300, I want to know what's wrong with it, because it's going to be significant.
Well, I think they just needed some money to get the hell out of town, because they just murdered this fucking dude.
Well, sure, but that's kind of a red flag. Like,
yeah.
If it's a drivable vehicle mm-hmm. with legal plates,
mm-hmm.
and it's $300, that's when you should probably call the police and be like, something ain't right.
Yeah, I wonder if he was talking, if this article was talking about the truck. Like, maybe he was trying to sell Andre's truck for $300.
That's what I'm thinking.
Probably.
Like, if they were trying to offload it, like, mm-hmm. whoops, evidence, we should probably give that to somebody else.
Right. So, presumably what happened was the three of them conspired to find an easy mark at the bar, where Teresa would kind of seduce him and get him alone. Then they took him back to, they went to Andre's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, like, what happened to where, because I think, I'm not quite sure the details about what exactly happened during the murder, but it seems like maybe Teresa, maybe Andre, or she, Teresa, like, convinced Andre to take her back to his apartment, and then, like, maybe Phillips followed her, and maybe Gervais came too, I don't know.
Yeah, there had to be some kind of setup. You know how you hear about how people will, they'll hire a sex worker through the classifieds?
Yeah.
And then they show up and the sex worker drugs them and then they get rolled for all their shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the sex worker's long gone.
Right.
Right. So they have zero intention of performing any services.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a decoy for whoever's actually going to rob them.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's probably a similar scenario. She was like, hey, let's go knock some boots.
Mm-hmm.
And then they follow him. Because she couldn't have known where he lived in advance. This is just some stranger, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably just followed him.
Yeah.
But what's up with these people? What's the motivation? What's the motivation for her?
She needs money to stay in the apartment, I think. And maybe Phillips, like, talked her into it, you know?
And maybe, okay, and I guess maybe I'm going to find out, but I wonder if she knew that they were going to take it that far.
You know, I don't know, but it kind of seemed to me like she didn't really, because I think she got off a little lighter. They all got sentenced to life in prison, but I think she got less charges. Maybe she got second degree or whatever it is, manslaughter instead of first degree murder.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if they presented this idea like, hey, you're going to be our decoy, then we're going to do all the dirty work and we'll split the cash.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't tell her that they would be willing to take it that far.
Right.
I just think a woman being that violent or being willing to exhibit that degree of violence is just far less common statistically
mm-hmm.
without some kind of pretty strong motivation. And typically when that happens, it's a domestic violence situation. It's not even a revenge killing. It's a, I'm trying to survive killing.
Yeah.
There aren't too many women who are serial killers. There aren't too many women that mm-hmm. you hear about who are just like randomly attacking people to get out their aggressions or whatever, you know, doing power plays. So I just think it's interesting that, not that it is impossible, she could be a psychopath.
Right.
No way to know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she doesn't have a conscience. But I just kind of, my hunch is that maybe they didn't fully disclose how far they were willing to go to get what it was that they wanted.
I mean, I always want to give women the benefit of the doubt because they so rarely get that.
Well, I also don't want to be so, I don't want to jump to the conclusion that she's innocent because she's a woman, because there's some
That's true.
Evil folks out there and gender is irrelevant.
True.
But statistically speaking, for a woman to pursue violence to that level is far less common. Mm-hmm. So it's just less likely.
Right.
Doesn't mean it can't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't, you know, who knows what her life was like.
Right. So, like I said, all three were sentenced to life in prison.
Good.
I think they're all still alive and still in prison.
Oh, well.
I mean, it was 1987, so
it's likely. Not really that long ago.
Right.
I mean, I bet if you're in prison, it feels like a really long time, but.
Yeah. So, District Attorney W.J. LeBlanc, when asked about his opinion of the information that Rosemarie Kerr could have, they asked him if it could have been a lucky coincidence, and he said, There was no way that it could have been by chance. This woman is a genuine psychic. She's the real thing. He believed in her so much that he asked her to testify at the trial.
Wow.
And in his view, her inkling had cracked the case and prevented other potential crimes. Because, I mean, think about it. Like, the chances that Christian, Andre's brother, would just see Andre's truck driving by on the road, like, that is...
Nil.
Right. That is so crazy, like a insane coincidence.
I mean, even if you have, say, if you're reviewing security footage, you almost have to watch it in real time to catch something happen.
Right.
Because things can happen so quickly.
Right.
That 1 or 2 minutes, if you scroll past it, if you're trying to skim footage, you miss all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the odds of passing another vehicle are so statistically unlikely.
Yeah.
And that's pretty impressive. I can't say that I have ever heard a story or read about a psychic that was that instrumental in helping solve a case. Typically, they come out of the woodwork and it's more like, I hope I get on TV. And they end up being more of a distraction than a help.
Yeah, definitely the other cases that I was looking into for this episode, they had way less information on the internet. And, you know, sometimes, in some cases, it was like, later found out that they had some sort of other connection that may, so it might have like caused some doubt and some stuff like that.
It's pretty far.
Yeah. So yeah, this is crazy. I mean, she testified at the trial. So this seems like a super legit case of a psychic helping the police, which is really awesome. I really like this story.
That's so interesting because, you know, I think, I can't remember if it was Stanford or Harvard. Well, it doesn't matter. It was an Ivy school. And they were studying whether or not things like ESP were real. And they initially concluded that it was possible that it was real. But then they later were like, crap, there was some problems with our experiment.
Right.
And decided against it. So there hasn't ever really been a good scientific study that's been done. It's all been anecdotal evidence that says that anything to do with psychic powers, ESP, all of that stuff is real. And I am not going to say that science knows everything. The universe is a very vast place. There are still many things that we don't understand. And I do think that a lot of times the people who work as psychics are highly intuitive.
Yeah.
And so if they're doing a reading for someone, often because they are intuitive and they're good interviewers, they can get that person to reveal quite a bit about themselves doing a cold reading. And I've seen some good, I've seen some good kind of like pseudo documentary things about that. And there was a famous psychic who claimed to have helped the police. She was on TV quite a bit for a while. She did the whole talk show circuit and that kind of thing. And she supposedly had helped with a whole bunch of cases. And I eventually they were like, eh, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But that's beyond a cold reading to be
right.
Several states away, and her sister also lived in that state. So how's she going to give her any information? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I can't explain it, but she definitely seems like something was there.
Yeah. So you talking about like seeing documentaries about psychic stuff made me remember that there was, did you ever watch America's Psychic Challenge, the TV show?
No, but that was on, awesome.
It was on Lifetime. I'm pretty sure
like awesomely terrible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I watched every episode of it. It just ran, I think, for a season. I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now. Yeah, it had 8 episodes.
It's a pretty short life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that for one thing, it was on Lifetime, so, you know, the chances of having a large viewership is probably small.
Indeed.
And also, it was a psychic reality show. So it was, like, basically a contest where they had like, I don't know, 12 or something different contestants, and they were all kind of psychic in their own way or whatever. And so they would present them with these challenges. Like, I remember one of the challenges was they had a line of dogs and then a line of people, and they were supposed to connect the dog with the owner.
Okay.
And then whoever did the worst would get eliminated off the show.
I feel like the dog's going to be giving you cues all over the place.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So then there was another one where they went to the hotel where Janis Joplin died.
Okay.
And they weren't told any information about this place. You could probably argue that maybe they already knew about it or something, because it's like, it's not an unknown case, right?
It's probably somewhat famous.
But they were told, you know, they weren't told any information, and so they were supposed to just, like, intuit all these details and stuff like that.
Okay.
And there were other challenges, too. Like, I think they had one where they had something set up in one side of a room, and they were partitioned off in another side, and they were supposed to, like, describe what was going on this side, and that kind of thing. And then they also had these, like, the transitions into the commercials were, like, testing the viewer's psychic challenge. So they would show, like, three candles, and you're supposed to figure out which one was going to, like, blow out after the commercials came back. Or after the commercials were done. I was so into it. It was so much fun. But, yeah, that's a thing that exists. I wonder if it's on Hulu or something. I want to watch that again.
I'm sure YouTube has everything, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. It says from in February 2011, winner Michelle White Dove was invited to participate in Psychic Challenge International. Winners from six countries were brought together for extreme psychic challenges in the Netherlands. I wonder what that means.
It sounds like Psychic Olympics. We need to find out more about that.
I'm so into it.
I don't want to go because I think the weirdo factor is probably way too high. It would get on my nerves. But I think that it could be some pretty spectacular people watching if you don't have to engage too much.
Right. Oh, it says here in the final challenge, White Dove... Maybe I didn't watch all of them because I don't remember this part, but... In the final challenge, White Dove and her challenger, Jackie Barrett, were handed a photograph of a man. As psychic detectives, they were given 30 minutes to find a stuntman that was buried underground in 10 acres of California desert. White Dove laid the photograph of the man on the exact location as men dug up the box in which a stuntman lay buried with an oxygen tank. Wild! Wild! That is crazy. That's crazy.
Of course it could all be totally staged because it's TV.
Mm-hmm. And she won $100,000 and the title of America's number one psychic.
I would so have that on a business card.
Yeah, right?
I'd be like, hey, I'm Holly Schroeder. I'm a number one psychic in America. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. You can reach me at Gmail.
Oh, so it also says, like, after this premiered in America, that's when they started doing it in other countries. USA, Norway, Great Britain, Bulgaria, the Netherlands, Denmark, Estonia, Belgium, Romania, Chile, Australia, Russia, Latvia, and Ukraine. And Russia is currently airing the 16th season, and Ukraine is airing the 15th season.
What? Interesting. Well,
so good.
Boatload of Catholics, and you know, the Catholics love all the superstitious kind of pseudo-witchy stuff. They would never call it that themselves, but it is.
Have you ever felt particularly psychic in your life?
I have had certainly what I would deem intuitive moments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I have good people sense.
Right.
And I was talking to someone about this earlier this week. We were talking about trust. Like, how do you know when to trust someone or not? And I'm kind of at the point in my life where if in my gut, my sort of internal spidey sense, I get that like red flag thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really pretty unapologetic about just walking away.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often and it is yet to fail me.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that that's psychic? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
I think that, I read people fairly well. And I think that people who are really manipulative, and because I was raised by someone who's a narcissist, I can a little more, and I've done a lot of therapy, I can a little more readily identify some of those things. I'm watching for them where maybe other people aren't.
Yeah.
So there was recently a person in a friend group. And another mutual friend had asked me kind of what I thought about that person. And I said, you know, my gut just sort of tells me that it would be best to keep my distance.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be polite. I'm not going to be a rude person. But just in my gut, I feel like it's probably best for me to keep some space there.
Yeah.
Well, fast forward a few months and it was definitely a really good idea.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the mutual friend has also made that same decision, and probably even in a more extreme way than I have, because they got more entangled with that person than I did. Because initially I was like, I'm seeing a lot of things that are red flags. And it wasn't anything that was really readily identifiable as like, well, that's a problem.
Right.
You know, it's not like they were like, well, I'm actually famous and, you know, telling some spectacular lies. It was just kind of like a unsettled feeling.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't happen very often. And I have learned to take note and to not be apologetic about it. Because when I have let my brain talk me out of it, it's been a mistake.
Right. Yeah.
And I do think that as humans, whether you want to call it like your spiritual self, your intuitive self, you can call it whatever you want. But I think that there's so much about our brain that we don't know. And, you know, our senses are receiving information all the time.
Yeah.
And so if you're someone who's fairly empathetic, like I am, I think you're sort of scanning all the time and looking for it. And some people are really naturally good at it and always have been. I think that I had that lockdown pretty good as a small kid, but then because of things in my family situation growing up, I got kind of diverted and doubted myself. And so I've sort of come back around as an adult where I'm like, no, I was actually on the right path to begin with.
Yeah, when I was...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. When I was in college, I had this really close friend who... She was a little boy crazy and didn't always have, like, a discerning eye for the men that she dated.
Okay.
And she would always ask me, you know, after she started dating somebody, she would always ask me what I thought about them. And me being a very blatantly honest person would tell her exactly what I thought about this person. Like, for example, she was dating this guy who I was sort of acquaintances with. He was friends with my boyfriend at the time. And I liked him a lot. I thought he was a nice guy. But I told her, I was like, he's just not, he's like too young in the brain, you know what I mean? Like, he's just not...
Frontal lobe's not cooked yet, man.
Yeah, he's, like, emotionally stunted, and he's just too immature. And she would always, every single time, she would be like, okay, whatever. And she would just just totally blow off my opinion. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, she would have broken it off with him and told me the exact reason why, and it was always the reason that I gave her... for not, she shouldn't be dating this guy anymore. But
yeah, and I think that I was probably a lot like her when I was younger. I think that
I was too. Yeah.
Yeah. I made a lot of poor choices.
Yeah.
But I think that when you have someone in your family group who is dysfunctional in some way, it can kind of mess with how connected you are to that intuition.
Yeah.
And so it takes some time to sort of reconnect with it.
Listen to your really honest friends.
Yes. Yeah, but, you know, I also found myself, at times in friendships with people who I thought were being really honest with me, and I respected that, but then later was able to reflect on those friendships and see that they were actually really kind of controlling. And when I got to the point in the friendship where I would sort of begin to assert myself in some way, then the friendship started to fall apart. Because I'm pretty, like, go along, like, whatever. I mean, not to say I have no opinions about anything, but when it comes to, like, you know, where we're going to go eat or, like, what activity we're going to do, I'm like, whatever. You know, I'm just in it for the company. I don't really care.
Well, maybe I should say listen to me if you're my friend.
There you go. That's probably good advice.
I'm always right.
I am definitely not always right.
Well, let me tell you about this, like, crazy-ass, like, premonition dream that I had. So, this was right before The Dark Knight came out. That movie with Christian Bale about, it was a Batman movie.
Okay.
That first, like, really dark movie that came out about Batman.
I don't pay attention to any of those things, but I believe you.
It's a good movie. You should watch it. But, I had this dream that I was on this futuristic looking motorcycle, and I was chasing some sort of bad guy, and I'm on this motorcycle, and I'm like driving through like a mall or something. It's like this high speed chase. It's really intense. It was like a really vivid dream, right? And so I was like thinking about it a lot. And so I go on a date with this guy, and we go see The Dark Knight. It just opened. You know, we hadn't seen it before, and so we go see this movie. I'm watching the movie, and then all of a sudden this scene comes up where Batman is in his Batmobile, he's chasing a bad guy, and then he jumps, it like, he, you know, does some, like, some, you know, technological magic or whatever, and the Batmobile turns into a motorcycle, or, like, a motorcycle shoots out of the Batmobile, and he's on this futuristic-looking motorcycle chasing a bad guy in and out of, like, weaving in and out of traffic and out of building, in and out of buildings and stuff like that. And I have this, like, flash of, like, oh my god, this was the dream that I had. Like,
total deja vu.
Yeah, it was exactly deja vu, like a deja vu, like, feeling. Now, in retrospect, maybe I saw that in a trailer and I don't remember it.
I mean, possible.
It's possible. But it really felt like the exact dream that I had.
I mean, as a skeptic, I would say, like, your brain is recording all the time, even if you aren't consciously aware of it. So it is, I would say it's certainly possible that you saw it in a trailer and then dreamt about it and had just kind of forgotten about it. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah. I also think I had a dream in middle school that my locker turned into a monster and was attacking me and opened its mouth and all the books fell on top of me.
That's not very nice.
And then the next morning when I went to school, I opened my locker and all my books fell on top of me.
That sounds very classic anxiety dream. I've had a lot of weird dreams in my time. A whole lot of weird dreams.
But any premonition dreams?
No, I've had some really strong intuitive feelings. I remember, I think I was 15, and it was New Year's Eve, and my friend Lisa was over, and my mom said she was going to go to a New Year's Eve party that was pretty far away. It was probably 30 minutes away, and I was like, please don't go. I have a horrible, horrible feeling. And she was like, oh, for cripe's sake, like, can I just have some fun? You know, I think she thought I was just being a buzzkill. And, or maybe that I was afraid to be at home alone, or I don't know what she thought. And I had this, like, horrible pit in my stomach the whole night. And she ended up getting into a car accident that fortunately she wasn't hurt terribly bad. The car was not in great shape, but, so I've had a couple weird things like
that. I would call that straight up psychic, because there's no way that you can intuit that from just reading her person, you know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe. Yeah.
You're just still skeptical about it.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I've had a handful of things like that where I just had, like, ooh, just like, I got a bad feeling about that. But then I've had things like, I don't know, I went to a party with two people who a week later threw some folks off a bridge and they seem fine.
Right.
So It's not foolproof.
Yeah, that's a reference to an earlier episode if you're just joining us.
Oh, yeah. So if you're just joining us, go listen to the Chain of Rocks Bridge episode. Mm-hmm. I have a personal connection to the murderers. And I do not say that with any sort of glee.
Right.
It's actually
no bragging.
Quite disturbing that I, not that I would prefer to know the victims. I would just prefer to not know anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my preference, to not know anyone connected to that case. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so it's definitely not foolproof, because I've had some sinister, weird people pop up in my life and they seem fine.
Mm-hmm.
But then I've had other times where, like that party where I was just like, and maybe it's because I'm closer to my mom, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have it. I've had some weird things happen in my time that I don't have any good explanation for. I can't science it out.
Right.
I don't think it's not possible that science could provide an answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I also have, you know, my grandma is a quote psychic.
Yeah.
So I think that has probably colored my perception some.
Yeah.
I had a friend do Reiki on me this week.
Oh.
And that was a real leap of faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about it?
I was fine with it, you know.
Actually, what describe the experience first.
Well, she did it at a distance. So she was, I was at home, which, and she told me she's got two different sorts of, I guess, master level certifications or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know what that means, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me if she wanted to do something. I forget what it was called. But basically, just because I've had like a pretty stressful time recently.
Yeah.
And I thought, what the hell? It's not, you know, if she wants to send some good juju out into the universe on my behalf, who am I to get in the way of that?
Right.
You know, it's no harm can come from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially, we had planned to kind of sync our time so that I would know when she was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she decided that I didn't need the extra stress of having to try and plan. So she just did it.
Yeah. Okay.
And she said, let me know if anything weird comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just really surprised, because she used to, I don't want to say specifically who she is, but the conversation evolved. I did not know this about her. What I did know previously about her was that she used to be a probation officer.
Hmm.
So I did not. It was very unexpected that I discovered she's somebody I've known for a few years, but I don't know super well. And we were having a conversation related to her prior job as a probation officer.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking her some questions about like kind of how that system works, and kind of interviewing her about finding information and navigating that system if you're wanting to know something about people.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it evolved into talking about kind of the things that were going on in my life and feeling sort of stressed. And then she was like, oh, by the way, I do Reiki, and would you be open to and willing to? And I was like, what the hell? Why not?
Yeah.
I used to have a massage therapist who would end each session with Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like maybe the last minute. So I was like, whatever. It's a minute out of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it makes her happy, I'm already pretty damn relaxed. So I don't care.
For people that don't know, what happens in a Reiki session?
So when you go to a massage therapist or somebody who does body work,
mm-hmm.
Reiki is kind of, I guess, like the equivalent of laying hands. So do they
physically touch you?
My massage therapist would like almost touch.
Okay.
So she would touch for the massage.
Right.
But you know how like when somebody's hand is really, really, really close to you,
you can kind of sort of feel the heat, sense it. Yeah.
But you know that they're not touching you yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know, your body has some sort of physiological response to the nearness of that person.
Right.
So at the end of the massage, she would do, I think she called it like a clearing or something. Like she would clear the energy. And I was like, whatever, lady, I don't care. The massage is great. So she would sort of swipe. I'm demonstrating with my hands as if people can see. But so it would be kind of the equivalent of like wax on, wax off Karate Kid motions over my back to kind of like sweep away energy, sort of metaphorically.
Yeah.
And I guess sometimes she would touch, but it was like fingertip touch. It wasn't massage touch.
Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, it was maybe 30 seconds or a minute. And I was so relaxed. I was like, you can do whatever you want. I don't even care. I've been here, laying here, sitting here for like 30 minutes.
Right.
At this point, I'm jello. So, I didn't find it. I felt pretty neutral about it.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever, it's fine. Do I think I like the idea of setting positive and good intentions? I think that the way that you, I mean, there's certainly plenty of science around positive psychology. So I think that setting good intentions or kind of getting yourself in a mindset where you're trying to be present in the moment and practice mindfulness and all of those things is totally okay. I think where Reiki differs is that they believe that they are a conduit for universal energy. And they have different names for what they would call that. So some people would call it like, maybe they would call it a goddess or something.
Right.
You know, the spirit. Spirit. I mean, I'm like, whatever name you want to call it, I don't really care.
So when your friend did Reiki on you, did you feel it? Did you notice anything? Did she tell you afterwards what time she did it?
She told me after she did it. Because I had sent her a message and I was like, so is now a good time? And then maybe 10 minutes later, she was like, I actually just did it.
Oh.
And I was laying in my bed because I was anticipating us getting ready to start. And I was kind of thinking of it like guided meditation.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, this is some time I'm going to dedicate to self-care and unwinding. Yeah. And so I'm whatevs. She's just going to, we're going to do it together. And that's cool. And she's a nice person. And I appreciate that she was wanting to support me.
Yeah.
In a really, really stressful time in my life. So I was actually laying in bed with my husband, just kind of snuggled up to him. And I would say that my stress level was reduced, but it's kind of hard to say the cause, you know, I mean.
I think that physical touch with a loved one also has been shown to, like scientifically.
And I get my chemical names all messed up, but I feel like it's oxytocin and serotonin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, so it could have been that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's my husband. I love him. He loves me. That's very comforting. It was the first time all day. I had laid down and been kind of quiet.
Yeah.
And I also knew my friend was thinking
of you.
Positive things for me. She said something about the moon, and I was like, I don't really know what that means.
Well, there was a full moon recently.
Yeah, she said, so after the Reiki session, she said, you're welcome. Be gentle with yourself. Everything's going to work out okay for your highest good. Trust that. So, I mean, I think that's a nice thing any friend could say. I didn't find that particularly witchy or weird.
Right.
And, before she said, you're going to be just fine. I know it may not seem like this at the moment, but spirit is working to move you to a better situation. So I guess she calls that universal energy spirit. And then, so her, I guess her way of saying like God is spirit. She called it distance healing. That was what she called it. And then, okay, so here's what she says about the moon. The full moon energy is still really strong. So it's a good time to write down things that you'd like to release. Things that no longer serve you and burn them in the moonlight.
Yeah.
The energy isn't just the day of the full moon, thankfully. Thank spirit in the universe or whatever you wish when you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have a, you want to have a fire pit party? You want to burn some?
Yeah.
And so I said, can I burn down the neighbor's house? Does that count? And she said, possibly. I was like, fine, I'll start with paper.
So, yeah, if this is your first episode, Holly and I are next door neighbors. And on the other side of Holly's house is a guy who is not a great dude. We'll just leave it at that.
That's enough information.
That's enough.
I described it to somebody the other day as, I have a neighbor who's trying to drive me slowly insane through sleep deprivation.
Right.
Yeah, that's enough said about that.
Yeah.
But I thought, and I do like the idea of when my friend Riddhi, she is, she grew up Jain, so she's from India.
Mm-hmm.
She's from Gujarat.
Mm.
She's Gujarati. And when her kitty died, we burned sage. And so like the sage, you know, the smoke going up.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's something cathartic to ritual.
Yeah, totally. I think that's been scientifically proven.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And every major religion has ritual for precisely that reason.
Yeah.
So whatever ritual you choose, I think it's really just whatever resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of like the idea of sort of setting something free by burning it, which I guess is a little witchy for somebody like me.
Right.
Totally
normal for somebody like me.
Right. Super normal for you, who defaults to, your brother's missing, you should call a psychic. Less typical for me, who you tell me your brother's missing, and I'm like, let's look up all the local authorities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like looking for a organizational chart.
Yeah.
For all the local authorities, and you go straight to, like, let's find a psychic in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, it's a little witchy for me. But as I've gotten older, probably more so in the last couple of years, I think I've gotten a little more open and okay with, like, I don't know and I don't need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
If I'm under a lot of stress, or if someone else is under a lot of stress, or if they're feeling, you know, maybe not their best self, and that this is something that makes them feel better, even if it's temporary, who am I to judge? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's being harmed in the process. So
yeah.
Not to say that I think that that could be, should be to the exclusion of doing the obvious, like taking medication for your psychiatric illness or seeking treatment for your addiction. You know, I don't think that it should be in place of, but of traditional treatments and therapies. But if those things that are supplemental and you feel like they help you, who the hell am I to judge? That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's my rant.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of the episode.
I think we had decided that we were going to talk about something chipper because our topics are always so heavy.
Yeah, I mean, we could, but we are also at an hour 23.
So we need to do it really fast.
Yeah. Do you have something in mind? Because I don't really have anything in mind. I mean,
well, I got, through that free group that I run, I get a huge box of videos, and one of them is a Care Bears video.
I love the Care Bears.
I know. And I thought, I'm having this like really hardcore nostalgic moment. And I've already committed to give it away to someone, but I think I'm going to watch it first.
So is it one of the movies? Because I think I have both the movies on VHS.
I don't think it's a movie. I think it's just a couple episodes.
Oh, okay.
But
the movies are so good.
Like adorable good or like actually have a plot?
Both.
Interesting.
Hi, Penny.
Hi, Penny.
Penny has joined us. Penny, if this is your first episode, Penny is my cat, and she's polydactyl, and she's very sassy, and
she just let me pet her.
Oh my god!
There's a demon in the room. That's what I've decided.
Really, Holly comes over and cat sits for me when I'm out of town, and Penny is usually very mean to her.
Oh, there we go.
Did you hear it? Did we get it on? I think we did.
Well, you probably got me screaming because she tricks me. She does that figure eight thing like she wants to be petted, but it's a lie. She gave it to me a couple times, though. I feel like we're making progress. Mm-hmm. She's my unrequited love. I love her so much, and mm-hmm. I think she's a beautiful gray and white tuxedo mini-toed goddess.
She has 27 toes.
She has a lot of toes.
Which is, I think she has 26 toes, and 27 is the world record.
I don't know. She's got a lot of toes.
She's got a lot of toes.
And she gets real mad when mommy goes out of town.
Yeah. She loves mommy.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, we'd like
to thank Care Bears.
We'd like to thank Brandon Lee Chilcote for our wonderful intro and outro music.
Thanks, Brandon.
If you have any personal stories or topic suggestions, like if you feel like you are a little bit psychic and you want to talk about your experiences with that, if you've had a premonition dream, if you've helped solve a murder case with your psychic,
if you want to come on the show visions, and do a tarot reading.
Oh my God, I would love that. Actually, let me be the resident tarot reader because I dabble in a little tarot from time to time.
Okay, future plan, you're going to do my tarot.
Of course. Anytime. I will, and that goes for any readers that want a tarot reading. I'll do a reading for anybody that wants it.
All right.
I'm currently not charging because I'm not all that great at it. I still have to look everything up in the book.
I was going to say, how much free time do you have?
So, if you have any of those
while supplies last,
right? If you have any stories you want to share with us or topic suggestions, you can tweet us at Creepy Club Pod. You can email us at creepyclubpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/creepyclubpodcast. Give us a like if you would, please. Follow us on Instagram at Creepy Club Podcast. And if you want to read our meeting minutes, which is what we call our show notes, you can go to creepyclubpodcast.com. And also, we're a small independent podcast, and we would really benefit from you rating and reviewing and subscribing to us on iTunes. I think you can rate us whatever stars you want as long as we have a review.
As long as
that's helpful to us.
Five. That's cool.
We would love it if you'd have constructive criticism instead of nasty, trolling, bad insults. That would not be great, but do what you will.
Don't give them permission to be buttheads.
No, I'm not giving them permission. I'm just saying,
let's set some healthy boundaries here.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, everybody has free will,
of course.
I think everyone should be kind to everyone else. I think that
I agree.
Our world kind of suffers from a lack of kindness.
So empathy is in a deficit right now, big mm-hmm, time. Mm-hmm. So I think,
but I also don't want to say if you absolutely hate this podcast, still leave a good review. I want to let people have their own opinions,
of course.
But it would just be nice if you hate it,
just don't listen. It's really easy.
Yeah, either don't listen or give us a constructive criticism sort of situation. We can always learn and improve. If your reason you hate it
is because you don't like murder, then
yeah, I mean, that's your
not
fault.
Really constructive.
That's your fault. I mean, it's called Creepy Club. If you're a hardcore skeptic, this might not be the best podcast for you.
If you were looking for a podcast about precious moments, this might not be a podcast for you.
Oh my God. Why isn't there a podcast about precious moments?
Please don't give it anyone that. Why did I say that? Now I've willed it into the universe. It's going to happen.
My grandparents bought me a birth. Do you remember the birthday train? Yes. Every Christmas, or maybe it was on my birthday because my birthday is really close to Christmas, I would get another addition to the birthday train, precious moments style.
Sorry about that.
It's probably in a box somewhere in my parents' garage.
That, hey, if it's your thing, whatevs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Yeah. So anyway, rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. That would be super helpful. Or whatever podcast app you use. We would greatly appreciate that.
We sure would. And we think you're wonderful. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we hope you join us next time. Meeting adjourned.